Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 37. Today we ask, is the media falling in love with fat? What are some myths, presumptions, and facts about obesity? And is actionable a word? Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, episode 37. I am Relentless Roger, here with Dr. Colin Chant, the Caveman Doctor. What's up, man?
Same old, working hard. I am now...
Hardly working.
I am on 2.5 weeks without coffee, and it has had its ups and downs. I cheated 3 times, including today. and I literally have drank 150 cups of tea. Did I say this in the podcast last week?
Sure did. But you're updating us. You're letting us know it's been another week almost.
It's been tough. And today,
you've cheated 3 times.
Today I cheated actually to get more calories in because I knew I wasn't going to get enough calories in. I had a long day.
Like bulletproof style?
Yeah, I don't have coffee at home now. So I legitimately brought a bottle of organic whatever cream to work and then just bought a coffee at Starbucks and threw it in there. And it was glorious. So yeah, I'm debating going back off of it, off the bandwagon, but on the bandwagon, I guess. Or off. Anyway, so that's what's up with me, man. What's new with you?
I am also, if you remember from last week, I'm also off coffee.
Oh, that's right.
I have not cheated 3 times, and I do not drink 150 cups of tea a day. And I was tired as all heck today. But I think it's important. I've gotten off coffee twice before that I can remember. But the 2 times I did it before were more for, I just want to see if I can do this reasons, not for any explicit purpose. The purpose now was just that caffeine has been affecting me, I think, more than ever, which is kind of funny. I was talking to someone and I said, as my stress levels increase, my ability to tolerate caffeine decreases. As my stress levels decrease, my ability to tolerate caffeine increases. So for example, I can go on vacation and drink coffee to my heart's content with no real consequence. And it's a shame that it's that way because when I'm on vacation, there's no real explicit need for a cup of coffee. Mm. When I'm super stressed, it's usually because I'm very busy and running all over the place, and that's when I could actually use a boost. It just unfortunately does not work that way for me. So this time around, it is actually for a purpose, so I don't envision myself going back to caffeine anytime soon until I can get, you know, business stressors and those kinds of things under control. Then I could see myself maybe dipping a toe back in.
Okay. Keep me updated.
Absolutely. But like I said, today, tired, you know, for the most part, it's been okay. You know, I had that very mild headache, not too much, because I was kind of weaning myself off. So not too much of a headache, just that very mild headache for the first day or two. Then fine. A lot of days have been perfect. Today, not so much, but I'm sure that tomorrow will be a little bit better.
Coming home from work with the sun out is one big factor helps that. And actually walking to work with the sun up helps.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to make it easier and easier.
And especially, excuse me, we're waiting for the weather to perk up.
Yeah. All those things really help alleviate stress.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
So yeah. So should we get to it here?
Let's get to it. So I'll lead off, and I have 2 articles today, and both of them are examples of maybe the tune changing in the media on fat. And number one, thank you, Andy, for sending this over. Wall Street Journal, Let Them Eat Fat is number one. And thank you, Joseph, for sending this over from NPR. And that one is called, Lard and Schmaltz Make a Comeback in the Kitchen. Now, neither article is too, you know, we don't need to get into either article. They're pretty self-explanatory. One is about how, you know, Crisco had replaced lard for a long time, but now lard is making a comeback in the kitchen, just as the title says. And then the other one, Let Them Eat Fat from the Wall Street Journal, is talking about sources of fat that the author loves and how maybe that tune is changing a little bit. So I'm interested. I mean, we're not used to seeing this kind of stuff. We're used to hearing things like fat is the devil, and to have 2 articles come out on mainstream news sources, neither earth-shattering, but again, the song or the tune is changing.
I think I was actually thinking about this earlier today. Joseph sent me that article as well, and I was going to present it, but Roger beat me out on it. But anyway, yeah, the lipid hypothesis is really dying. I mean, you have all these cardiologists. Once the cardiologists are jumping ship, you know that things are turning, because that's fat and clogged arteries are synonymous.
Yep.
So if the experts that work with clogged arteries are saying not so fast, you know the tide is turning. And lard's delicious, and it's great to cook with. And it's green. If you make bacon, the grease that comes off it and you cook your vegetables in it, you're being green. You're being resourceful.
Absolutely.
So I actually cook a lot of vegetables and lard, and then I bring them to work the next day, which is a nice way to get a lot of extra fat in. And I refuse to cover any of my food because I think it's a waste. I would never cover food with plastic, obviously. And then aluminum foil, I think it's a waste. So I put it in the fridge at work, and everyone just gets so ticked off at me on a daily basis telling me to wrap the food up, and I refuse. So anyway.
Until that one day you get sick, and then they're going to be all over you about it, saying I told you so.
Well, it hasn't happened yet.
That's right.
So yeah, and once again, you know, these are the foods that we've been eating for quite a while, and it only makes sense that it's good for you.
Yeah. Someone's going to poison your stash one day.
Yeah, that's bound to happen. But when I bring meat, people get really ticked, and sometimes I bring crazy meat that's just kind of sitting out.
Define crazy meat.
Not crazy meat, but I mean, people get weirded out when I bring in like literally a half a pound of bacon just sitting stacked up on a plate. Solidified, and that freaks people out as well. But you know, often there's bloody red meat just sitting
in
the fridge.
So, hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, I'm out here in 3 months.
So man's got to eat.
Man's got
to
eat. Exactly.
Then you'll take your wares to Pittsburgh and see how they react.
Yeah, they'll be cool with it.
All right.
The Berg is down with that kind of stuff.
Okay.
All right.
What you got?
So we're talking about fat in the media. Now we're going to talk about sugar in the media. And this article is from PLOS1. It is online and free for anyone to access. The title is The Relationship of Sugar to Population Level Diabetes Prevalence, an Economic Analysis of Repeated Cross-Sectional Data. And this is Robert Lustig. So Dr. Lustig is a endocrinologist who worked at St. Jude's. I actually saw a bunch of his patients when I was there. And now he is at UCSF, and his big crusade is against sugar. And he's been trying to show that sugar independently causes diabetes, which I think you and I would bet the barn on that, but not everyone believes it. So this is a population-based study, which obviously has many limits, as do all population-based studies. But you know, he really took it to the next level in this one. He basically looked at economic models of repeated cross-sectional data on diabetes and nutritional components of food from 175 countries. And he basically found that for every 150 kilocal per person per day increase in sugar availability, so there's 5 calories per gram, so that's what, 30, was associated with increased diabetes prevalence by 1%. And he looked at all these selection biases. He controlled for other food types, fibers, meats, fruits, oils, cereals, total calories, whether patients or people were overweight or obese, all these socioeconomic variables such as aging, urbanization, and income, and basically found that for every 30 grams of carbs, can of soda per day that you eat, your risk of getting diabetes goes up by 1%. This is across all these populations. And he says this is independent of sedentary behavior, independent of alcohol usage, not confounded by obesity or being overweight. So his point here is that sugar independently, regardless of, you know, it leads to obesity, et cetera, but it independently may, because this is an population study, may lead to diabetes. So it's interesting because I said this to a couple of people at work, and they responded, yeah, no crap, that's obvious. But it's still not obvious to everyone. Just like the fat anecdote that, you know, you're discussing, that's not common to everyone yet. People think it's crazy.
Yep.
So I think we're getting there. But the more of the story for this article for me, and we talk about this often, you know, we argue about 1 versus 2 sweet potatoes a day, rice, all this banter. But when it boils down to it, if you're still eating a fair amount of sugar, then that's obviously the number one food that needs to be eliminated from the diet. And I think most people would agree on that, whether they're low carb, high carbers, whatever you want to call them. Sugar clearly plays no role in health.
Sugar 1, grains 2. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, we'll link this on here. You can take a look at it. It is chock full of data. It is long. He lists the diabetes prevalence and obesity prevalence in all these populations. There's just It's pretty long. I didn't read it all, but nonetheless, take a look at it.
Yeah, I mean, he does good work. I mean, he obviously has an axe to grind. He's fully on the sugar bandwagon, but I don't think that this is not controversial to us, at least.
Yeah.
So we're all about it.
It's just interesting because he discussed this in Ancestral Health. I assume
yes.
it was some of his work that led up to this article. But it's funny because after hours, I saw the guy just pounding Coke. I'm just kidding.
You had me for a second. Yeah. Wait, are you about to break? Or are we going to turn into like U.S. Weekly?
Yeah, exactly.
Breaking news.
Anti-sugar
paleo
man.
Personality seen pounding Coke.
Anyway, so check out the article. It's interesting, and like I said, it's not news to us. But
maybe we should shift gears. You know, we should go into PaleoFX with solid reputations, and then you know, come up with all this dirt
just
and then
indict,
just air it.
Indict.
Yeah,
I like it.
We would never do that.
Or would we? All right. Passing the baton back.
All right, let's do it. Let's bring up a new Mark Sisson article. This one just hit. It's called 10 Full Body Workouts You Can Do in 10 Minutes Flat. As you know, I love actionable articles. And this is an extremely actionable article. And it hits home because I just happened...
Huh? Is actionable a word?
It better be.
It is now.
It is now. I'm going to say yes. So, challenge.
All right.
I'm going to say actionable is
check
a word.
It out.
So... those are the kind of workouts that I like. Those are the kind of workouts that I do. Those are the kind of workouts that I assign. So I always respect when someone comes up with something similar and gives you specific ways to do that. So the article is exactly like it sounds. He gives you 10 ideas to execute quick, mostly anywhere, and in all cases, total body workouts. And I'll leave, you know, we'll obviously link the article in the show notes. It's a great piece. I'll just mention two quickly that hit home with me. One that I've done before and like, and actually was giving it out to a few clients today. And the other that I have never tried, but would love to. The one is the burpee ladder. And that's where you basically tick off 10 minutes on a clock. And the first minute you do 10 burpees, the second minute you do 9, then 8, then 7, all the way down to 1. I think it's a great way to get a boatload of burpees in. Burpees, definitely one of my favorite body weight exercises. And then the second one, the one that I haven't tried but would love to do, is to do some car pushing. So to find a street that he suggests, finding a street that has a slight incline to it. Not a lot. One that you can barely see, but one that's there. And you start by pushing the car up the hill, with, he says, preferably your buddy, you know, in the driver's seat with it in neutral. And then immediately go around to the other side of the car and then try sprinting it down the incline and then switching positions and then keeping on working through the 10 minutes. I love that
it's,
stuff.
How long do you push each side for?
Let's see.
Cause it's not, every time I go home.
20 to 30 yards.
Yeah, that's rough. That's
it's
hard.
Rough. It's a rough workout.
Every time I go home, my brother and I, we do my 90, my grandfather, actually in a week, he's 96. My grandfather sits in his little Subaru. And then we alternate. One person pushes it up, next down, rest a minute, reverse, you know, up and down.
I like it.
It always ends in vomitous.
Maybe we'll have to, he actually says at the end, try not to throw up.
Yeah. It's literally one of the most thoroughly exhausting things you could do. Yep. Every part of your body.
Well, one of the exercises I love in the gym is the push sprint. And that's the one, I've said it on the show before, but just to reiterate, that's where you have the treadmill off and flat. And you put your hands on the front of the face of the treadmill to a stable position, grab the bar if there's a bar, and just push. And you're actually powering the belt with your feet. And ideally, you're going for, let's say, 15, 20. I don't really recommend any more than that if you're truly going all out, because the idea is to move the belt as literally fast as you possibly can. And that's like a light car, right? But obviously, the car, you're pushing a lot more weight. So I think it would get you further down throw up road.
Yeah.
So anyway, great article. Thanks to Mark Sisson for posting it, and it'll be in the show notes.
Great. So as we round off the articles, I have one here. It's from the New England Journal of Medicine. It's titled "Myths, Presumptions, and Facts About Obesity," and I will post this on here. It's an interesting read, and it's not very scientific, and it's a quick read. And it's a terrible article, and it's a great article at the same time. Some of the points I think are very pertinent, and some of them I think are just biased banter. But nonetheless, check it out, take a look. And I just wanted to discuss a couple of these with you, Roger, and get your take on this. Basically, they listed a bunch of exactly what they call it, myths, presumptions, and facts about obesity.
Okay.
But these are what they call myths, presumptions, and facts. So to others, that their facts may be myths and their myths may be facts. It's not a meta-analysis. They basically put a myth and then they cherry-pick data to show that that myth doesn't exist. But we know in the dietary world, the nutrition world, there are articles that support and go directly against pretty much everything and anything. So it's easy to cherry-pick those things. But the interesting myth, and I'll just, like I said, I'll pitch these to you, see what you think. The first one is that small, sustained changes in energy intake or expenditure will produce large, long-term weight changes. And basically, what that means, and everyone has heard this so many times, that decreasing small amounts per day will, over time, will lead to a certain amount of weight loss. So, you know, they talk about the half-century-old 3,500 calories rule, which equates to a weight alteration of 1 pound. So basically, you know, they talk about if you, one of the other things here, if you walk a mile per day, you know, you'll lose more than 50 pounds over a period of 5 years. So they say that actually true weight loss is only about 10 pounds. So everyone heard that. You have to lose a little bit of time. If you just don't eat that piece of bread every dinner, after 5 years, you'll lose 30 pounds. And they basically say that that's a myth.
It's interesting, right? I mean, I kind of prefer to look at this one outside of the context of myth and truth, right? I think that all these changes that we could discuss here that would fall into this bucket are productive changes. And so I'm kind of skirting the question here, but I don't think it's productive to look at it as truth or myth. Sorry, I don't think it's productive to look at it as myth. I think it probably falls more in the middle ground. But I think regardless of whether it falls in the middle ground or if it's full-blown true, it's a productive change nonetheless, yeah. You know? I don't know that I'm tackling this question head on, but I would say that I agree that these changes are productive and will result in some physical change.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not necessarily against that it won't be maybe as great as the linear sum.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the question is with homeostasis, and they kind of hit on it. If you walk an extra mile a day, are you actually eating X amount of calories per day to help offset your metabolism, vice versa.
Let me pull that back a second. I'm assuming everything else unched.
Yeah, okay.
Right? I'm assuming everything else is unchanged. That everything I said, that's the underlying assumption. If you are talking about tweaking multiple variables at once, if you're kind of saying like walk an extra mile a day and then whatever else happens happens, then yeah, you might eat extra to compensate and nothing might change. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So,
all right, then along those lines, I'm going to skip to their third myth, and that is large, rapid weight loss is associated with poor long-term weight loss outcomes as compared with slow, gradual weight loss. And that's the one we hear all the time, basically.
I agree.
You agree?
I agree.
So, I think for some, obviously these can go either way. I do think, like a lot of people when they turn to paleo, a lot of people when they turn to low carb, they lose a big amount, and you hear about the yo-yo dieters left and right, and this is what you think of. Obviously, you know, the yo-yo dieters, you see them doing worse. That being said, I don't see a whole lot of people that lose a slow and steady amount. I think I'm actually agreeing with them on this one. I think paleo, like I said, paleo people that make these drastic changes, they see the results and then they're hooked, and it's a lifetime of change. And
So I have to qualify my statement here again. Okay. Too, I'm not looking at this through the paleo lens. I'm looking at this through, I'm a personal trainer lens.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this through all the people that I interact with, all the people that I have access to in any way, shape, or form, whether they're my clients, whether they're someone else's clients, whether just people that I've seen and been able to talk to. Yes, if you go paleo or paleo-ish, I would argue that you're adopting the minority approach, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is to all our listeners, many of whom are somewhere in that world. This is positive news, right? If you're adopting that minority approach, I think that's the way to lose a lot of weight pretty fast and make it sustainable because, I mean, you're making incredibly positive changes, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm looking at it through the wide scope lens, paleo being a small percentage of those people. And I think that I have a lot more exposure, I guess, to some crash dieters.
Yeah.
And in those cases, it almost always ends poorly. So I, you know, let me qualify and say that. If we restrict this to our discussion relevant to the paleo-ish world, then I think the long-term prognosis is a lot better.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And that's what my issue with this whole article is. A lot of these, you can go either way. And then the other one I thought was interesting is setting realistic goals for weight loss is important because otherwise patients will become frustrated and lose less weight. And they kind of say that it might be the opposite, where you set these unrealistic goals and then the patients end up kind of meeting halfway. So I don't know what you've seen. Obviously, this is your cup of tea here.
It's my cup of tea. Personality based.
Yeah.
It's completely, you know, my goal, my sole goal, right, in here at Relentless Fitness is to personalize it. It's a personalized approach. And I see people who fall all over the spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, personality wise.
No. Just roll with it.
So we have a watch going off here in the gym. We're considering hitting stop on the podcast, maybe for the first time ever.
Yeah, don't
but
do
we,
it.
We will not do that.
You can find and turn it off. I'll just keep bantering on.
It's off anyway. Okay, so here's the deal. My whole goal here is to personalize the approach. And, you know, I've worked with vegans, vegetarians, paleo people, everything. I've worked with type A's, type B's, you know, and type something else. You know, basically what I'm trying to say is I've worked with every type of person that you can imagine. And I think that different approaches work better for different people. So when specifically addressing this article, I know some people who will not get up out of bed in the morning if it's not a crazy goal, if it's not preposterously out there. And I like those kinds of goals too. You know, I'm very aggressive and attentive to something when I'm doing it. And so I don't want to do something for a small goal, you know? Even though that's kind of silly in some cases, that's just how I am. Mm-hmm. So in those cases, if you're that type of personality, you need that lofty goal. And then there's the other side of the coin, where the other side of the coin is, I've worked with many, many people who, if I gave them that type of a goal from day one, that goal is a very intimidating thing. And it almost backs them into a corner. And I see them as getting less results than they would otherwise because they're faced up against such a daunting goal. So I guess my response is there, and probably my response for all of this is it depends.
Yeah. You heard it first from Roger Dickerman. He treats you as an individual. all right. My last 2 points. The hilarious thing, I don't know where they get this from. Their other myth was a bout of sexual activity burns 100 to 300 kilocal for each participant, which like where the hell did that even come from? Anyway, and they say that a man in his early to mid 30s might expend approximately 21 calories during sexual intercourse. That's the right field. I don't know where that came from, but bar trivia, you'll get it right. 21 calories.
There it is.
And then interesting, just a side note. They have a chart here that has some facts about obesity. I agree with them. One of those continuation of conditions that promote weight loss promotes maintenance of lower weight. Obviously, you know, these are things that you need. That's the whole point of why we do the podcast, why we do what we do. These things need to be repeated. People forget. People lose motivation. And then interestingly, then they start talking about facts. And this is a fact according to them. Meal replacement products promote weight loss. Pharmaceutical agents can help patients achieve weight loss. Bariatric surgery. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then you turn to the last page and look at the first page and look at the conflict of interest. And they're like consultants for Kraft and billion, zillion companies. So anyway, check it out. It's an interesting article. At least makes you think about the myths. There are so many myths out there about weight loss, and rightly so. It's very uncertain science. So check it out.
I think maybe my takeaway from this article, because you know, it depends isn't the sexiest answer out there. But I hope what we inspire to our listenership is do the critical thinking.
Yeah.
Please do, especially when you're just starting out, especially when you're just getting your hands dirty. If you've been at this for a couple of years plus, you're probably already doing the critical thinking without even consciously doing the critical thinking. If you're just starting out, please think this stuff through. This is not one size fits all. There are fundamentals that apply to almost anyone. Yes, definitely. But a lot of these issues we talk about, there are multiple angles, and you've just got to test it out. The whole last week of work I did for the Relentless Nutrition Action Plan book was all about self-experimentation. And I'm really, really behind that. Just that idea of, listen, just because we say something doesn't make it so. You've got to put it in action and see for yourself. And if it's not working for you, go do something else.
Yeah, 100%.
Be smart about it. Give it enough time. Give it at least, you know, don't do it for a day and then assume it doesn't work. You give it a couple weeks. Give it enough time. Do it consistently. See for yourself. And you either stick with it or you ditch it and move on to something else.
Yeah, and keep in mind, whatever we say is not a myth, a presumption, but a fact about obesity. All right. Tangible takeaways.
Takeaway time.
You want to lead us off?
All right, let's do it. Exercise. So, taking the words from your mouth. The last couple times you've had takeaways that that relate to the peak in the weather, or the peak in the weather that we're waiting for. Today was the first day of spring, by the way.
Was it really?
Didn't feel like it.
It was sunny, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's about it.
But we're waiting for it to feel like it. But with the first day of spring in mind, and this goes along with what we were just saying about fundamentals, but this opens up the whole world of possibilities. You talked about outdoor workouts, the return of sprints, these kinds of things, right? Mm-hmm. The Mark Sisson article I talked about today, he's clearly thinking outside the box, pushing cars, you know, doing sets of burpees. He'll talk about a lot of other stuff involving sand and some other things. The whole world is open to you when the weather gets nice. You know, the beach is there. You can go out to parks and playgrounds and fields and tracks and in-home and, you know, basically it's all a possibility. And so with that in mind, I just wanted to say fundamentals are so important. If you know if you can learn once the fundamentals of a good workout, then you can go anywhere and create a workout on the fly. You can go to a park with, monkey bars and dip bars and all sorts of things, and just bam, in the moment, you get a workout.
What, monkey bars and dip bars?
Yeah. Why not?
Oh, you use the monkey bars as dip bars.
No, I'm saying, you know, those dip bars are in a lot of parks.
Really?
They're probably for other purposes than dips.
But Little kids are just doing dips.
they look to me like dip bars. All right, I guess I'm a personal trainer, right? Yeah, I see it with the personal training guy. They're clearly not there for dips, but I don't know what they do with them. Anyway.
Bringing little Mikey to the park to do some dips.
But with that in mind, if you know the fundamentals to a good workout, and when I say fundamentals, I'm thinking basic push, basic pull, double leg motion, maybe a single leg unilateral motion, maybe some core stability, maybe some sprints. I mean, you kind of have it all right there, right? You can maybe throw in some other smaller categories, but just hit the broad strokes. If you know you need to do something where you push away from your body, you know you need to do something pulling towards your body, you know you need to do something in the double leg world, like a squat, like a deadlift, picking something up from the ground, maybe throw in a single leg, like a lunge, something like that, a core stability, some sort of planking motion or stabilizing motion, and sprints, you can obviously do that anywhere. You got the tools. You can go anywhere, look at your terrain, and just have some fun. And I think that's a powerful, powerful thing. So with all these fad workouts out there and all that crap, I'm pretty jaded. But with all that stuff out there, and all that stuff definitely providing some value, but leaving you, it's like providing you one recipe instead of the principles behind the recipe. If you know the principles behind the recipe, you can create 100 recipes, right? If you know just that one recipe, you're going to be able to make just that one recipe. So if you get a workout assignment, you've kind of got just that one workout.
Like a workout cook.
That's right.
I like it.
So I'm saying invest the time and the energy into learning the fundamentals once so that you can go into any of these terrains and rock it out.
I like it. I'm going with the warmth as well. You know, I think exercise, especially as I work more and more hours and get older, so much of it's motivation. You know, back in college days, I think motivation was 10% or so. I was just motivated. It was more the actual workout. Now, I think motivation's up to about 70% of me getting into the gym, me working out hard, me throwing some weights around. But it's warm out. I'm back to implementing a lot of bodybuilding-type lifts within my workouts to try to put on mass. And, you know, there's just, it's warmer out. people wearing skimpier clothes. There's a lot of extra motivation.
And the pool beckons, man. The Pittsburgh pool beckons.
And, you know, call it what superficial, call it what you want, but go with any motivation to get you working out, being more active, and being healthier. Just go with it. And I'm using it as my personal motivation. It's helped me get in the gym. Maybe it will help you.
Like Larry David said, whatever works.
Whatever works.
Yeah, man. And it truly will be a Pittsburgh summer for you, too.
It will. The apartment that I'm moving to has a pool.
Nice.
So, gotta get ready for it.
Every day.
Every day. All right. Diet.
Diet. So, I'm going to Dr. Briffa. Haven't referred. I feel like for maybe 5 or 10 podcasts there, it was like every other podcast we would refer to a Dr. Briffa article. And then there's been a lull.
It's been a while.
So, it's time to bring him back. And he recently wrote an article called Why I'm Not Worried About the Odd Bit of Bacon and Occasional Sausage in My Diet. And so it's about processed meat, as you can probably infer from that. He talks about two studies, and I think this is very relevant to something we talked about in this podcast, just how things are sometimes presented from both sides. We talked about this in past podcasts too, like if a study comes out to support paleo, you don't hear too much about it in the mainstream. But if a study comes out to disparage something, it's all over the headlines, like the red meat studies and whatnot. So he's referring, I think these studies were both done by the same group of researchers in Switzerland. And the first study had come out saying that meat consumption did not correlate with death, but processed meat consumption did. And then the same group of researchers put out another study and said neither red and processed meat nor white meat consumption were consistently associated with all-cause or cause-specific mortality. And the thing that struck me was not necessarily any conclusion or takeaway about the processed meat itself. The thing that struck me was his words on these two studies. The fact that in Switzerland, the lion's share of the press went to the one that said processed meat's bad for you. And that's consistent with some of the things that we're finding. You know?
Oh, 100%. So it's a citation.
It does seem like one of the critical takeaways to this podcast, we're saying, you know, the critical thinking, the thinking things through for yourself is essential. And maybe seeing a study in the media is not the be all and end all.
I agree.
So in terms of processed meat, I mean, I think we're both, you know, I think we're both on the bandwagon of make sure you source it well.
Yeah.
Get quality processed meat. And eat it here and there, and you should be fine.
I agree.
Yeah. Bam.
Bam. So, quickies for me, two quickies. First one's kimchi. I've been eating it daily. I've been throwing it on everything. I think we had some the other night, right?
Sure did.
You know, it's a great way to get some probiotics in. It's tasty. There's really no downside, and it's really good on beef. So anyway, that's the first one. Second one, I've been getting, bone marrow. Just the femur. Straight cut, just the cylinder of bone. Mm-hmm. You just literally put it on a pan 20 minutes in the oven and it sits up nice for you. Just get a spoon and just spoon it out and it is delicious.
Where are you sourcing the bones from?
A local grass-fed beef farm.
Nice. So is that through the farmer's market that comes by?
Yeah. Well, they have them there and they have them at the Reading Terminal Market.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
They never have them because as soon as I see them there, I buy all of them.
Yeah.
So,
dude, you might have some competition.
All right. I shouldn't have.
I actually get mine from Philly Cowshare. I recently talked to them and just let Megan know. Anything, whenever you have grass fed marrow bones, let me know. And I just got 7 pounds of them the other day.
Did you really?
Yeah. Yeah. What's up now?
You just went up to me on the podcast.
What's up now? I just got 5 pounds of grass fed liver and 7 pounds of grass fed marrow bones.
All right.
Deal with it.
Well, you better make me some dinner. all right. Is it that time?
I think it's that time.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and lead because you just 7 pound one up to me with marrow bones. But my caveman corner here, going with that article, ignore the myths, especially with diet and exercise. There's just so many things you hear about every day. You know, fat's going to kill you. Fat's good for you. This is going to do this. This is going to do that. Not eating breakfast makes you lose weight. Eating breakfast makes you lose weight. And kind of going back to what Roger was saying, know what works for you. You know, if you start not eating breakfast and you feel like crap all day long and you're not losing weight, then obviously, regardless of whatever article they quoted to whatever news source to you, that doesn't work for you. So figure out what works for you, roll with it, and be honest to yourself. I've definitely done several things, and I would say, oh, this benefits me more so than the other, and it's just not the case. And it's when you're told something for so long, you become conditioned to think that that's the truth, even though it may be supported by very little to no evidence.
Absolutely.
So do your research. Know what works for you. Everything is individualized.
I like it.
All right.
It's a big theme today.
It really is.
All right. Relentless Report. Last night, actually, we wrapped up the last Relentless Transformation program with a nice group call, and it was a great time. We talked about a lot of takeaways, speaking of the word. And I wanted to bring up, it was a really interesting discussion. I had asked everyone on the call to offer me their takeaways as they transition the program forward into their lifestyle. And someone had talked about a goals exercise. And the goals exercise was he sat down and considered, he thought years ahead. He thought, what are the things that I want to be a part of my life? And he kind of put, you know, an hour, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever the time frame was, he put the forethought in what he wanted out of his life in the next several years. And then another transformer, she had responded a little bit differently. And she said that those thought processes didn't necessarily work for her. She thought, you know, life kind of just happens and your best laid plans can go awry. And I kind of, as I tend to do, I pulled it back to a middle ground. And I thought, what a useful exercise for anybody to sit down and think ahead out of what you want out of your health in the next, let's say, 2 or 3 years, right? Just the big broad stroke things. And the word that we eventually pulled from this discussion was a beacon. That something like that then becomes a beacon for you. Just kind of like a lighthouse beacon. You always know how to steer your ship, right? So this fits with both of their exercises. The one where life just kind of happens and to-do lists don't work, you're not making a to-do list. You know, yeah, I mean, if you have a to-do list for today, if something goes awry, you know, you may never get to anything on that to-do list. This is more like a principle list, you know, where you want to be in a couple years, broad stroke. If a day goes awry and, you know, it hits the fan, you adjust course and maybe it's a matter of getting back to it the next day. You know, if it's a perfect day, well, you know exactly where you're sailing. So I really like that principle of taking a step back from all the craziness. We talk all the time about how crazy it can get with, you know, phones and TV and yeah, all this media nonsense. And it can just get very, very overwhelming. So the act of taking 1 hour to step back from all that, quiet it down, and to think, where do I want to be in a couple of years? You know, paint that picture. And then now you have your beacon. I think it's a pretty powerful exercise.
I agree. Set those goals so you can live up to them.
Yeah. And it's uncomfortable too. I actually know a lot of people who when we talked about long-term planning, they get very uncomfortable. I think it's a good comfort zone to break, or a good discomfort zone to break. Not that you have to make it your comfort zone, but just kind of fight through that for an hour. I think you'll see some good benefit from it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So this is our last podcast pre-Paleo FX.
We're going to try to do one from there.
Yeah, we'll take the equipment along. We'll see what happens. And at a minimum, I mean, we'll be grabbing takeaways galore. And
yep,
then so we'll either be able to record something there and release it when we get back, or at worst, we'll record the week we get back and release that week. So you will, expect that we're taking a week off. And if we release something, which we will try to, then it'll be a little bit of a bonus.
Expect for the worst, but hope for the best.
Bam. Exactly.
All right. There it is. You have it?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find this man, as always, on cavemandoctor.com. You can find me on relentlessroger.com. And then the two of us and this podcast are always up on iTunes.
Everyone have a good week.
See you in one or two.
Is actionable really a word?
Actionable is a word.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, see you next week.